Friends, look, good afternoon. It's lovely to see you here at the City Bible Forum this Thursday afternoon. My wife, working at the doctor's practice where she works Monday, Wednesday, Friday at a doctor's practice, and she had a bit of a tiff with her boss on Monday afternoon, and it really was the same tiff that she has once or twice a week, every week, in that Kathy has a goal at work of getting out of work by 2:30 in order to pick up our kids from school, and her boss has the goal of her seeing as many patients as possible. And so they have that constant tension over issues, and so she's due to stop seeing patients at around about 1:30 to give her an hour to write up the notes, and her boss comes to her at about 2:15 saying, or 2 o'clock saying, can you ring up such and such and see if she needs a house call? And Kath says, well, look, if I ring her up to see if she needs to do a house call, you know I can't do the house call because I've got to go at 2:30. And she said, yes, just ring her. And Kath rang her, and then the boss said, have you done that house call yet? And it's just, that's the tension that she has at her work. But I tell you that story from her, but you could tell me that story from you, in that all of us have those kind of tensions every day in the office. Talking to a friend, and she told me about her wedding present. She got a lovely set of nice big cups from somebody for their wedding, and she took her big mug to work. And she thought, this is nice, I've got my own mug for the office to have my coffee in, and one of the other designers borrowed it. And she said, it's been on her desk all week, and it's got, I'm only new here, and should I go and talk to her about it? And now there's bits of crusty old Milo around the rim. And I tell you that story from her, but it's everybody's office, isn't it? I was driving, I made a mistake in the traffic, and I thought the person behind me's reaction was disproportionate to my offence. And they just honked too loud and too long, and I know you can't control the volume of a honk, but it just felt disproportionate. And it's how we get on with each other. We're working in this series at the City Bible Forum through the Sermon on the Mount. And it's Jesus' great address. And if you look on that black sheet of paper, the glossy sheet of paper, you'll see the program over the next few weeks. And this week it's Jesus, the law, and my problems in the office. But next week it's Jesus in the office affair. And the week after that it's compassion and clarity on divorce. And there's lies coming up, and revenge, and there's love. And today it's how we handle anger, how we handle it when I offend someone, they offend me. But before we get to the specific, we're going to look at the principle that Jesus is going to give us today that's going to apply to all the specifics over the next few weeks as we go through this series. So if you consider yourself a follower of Jesus to any degree, we're going to be working out how to put into practice today what it would look like to follow Jesus in just the way we live. And but it's going to be easier to do it in abstract than in practice. Now, time of Jesus. There's all sorts of guidelines for how to handle different situations. And the religious kind of leaders of the time, they called them Pharisees. And the Pharisees were very strict. And they were so careful about keeping the rules that they had extra rules written around the rules to make sure they didn't go anywhere near breaking the rules. And so you take a commandment, like one of the Ten Commandments, like keep holy the Sabbath day, and you've got that kind of clear commandment from God, and how does a Pharisee put that into practice? Well, a Pharisee would say, look, I don't want to break a Ten Commandment, I want to keep that, I want to do what that says, so they made all these extra rules. This is what thou shalt not do on the Sabbath. Thou shalt not sow, thou shalt not plough, thou shalt not reap or bind sheaves or thresh or winnow or select or grind or sift or knead or bake or shear the wool or bleach or card or dye or spin or warp or make two thrums, whatever that is, or weave two threads or separate two threads or knot or unknot or swing two stitches or tear for the purpose of swinging two stitches. You must not hunt the stag, you city workers. You must not slaughter the stag. You must not flay the stag, salt the flesh, prepare the hide, scrape the hair, cut into pieces. You're kind of feeling, I'm pretty good on all of this stuff. I've never done that on the Sabbath at all. Well, you must not write two letters of the alphabet next to each other. How are you feeling now? But some of you have done that on the Sabbath. Ooh. You must not erase for the purpose of writing two letters. I guess that means the delete key's out on the Sabbath. You must not build, you must not demolish, you must not kindle a fire, put out a fire, you must not strike a hammer, and you must not transfer one object from one area to another. Now, how does the Pharisee work it? I guess today, if you've got a command like do not speed, they would keep the speed limit. People, it's the Pharisees would say, how would we take it? We'd say, do not speed, kind of 10K above the speed limit's okay for the New South Wales government, so that's probably okay for God. I mean, that's how people think today, isn't it? Not you, of course, but this is how the Pharisee would think. Well, look, I do not speed. Even though I own a car, I might be tempted to speed when I'm driving, so I'll leave my car at home. It's that kind of extra rules around the rules to make me keep the rules. Now, Jesus is there giving this speech, great speech. And he started the speech last week with this lofty language, blessed are. And we heard Jesus say, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek, blessed are the hunger and thirst for righteousness. And I think some in the audience would be thinking, hang on, Jesus, why didn't you say blessed are the pious, blessed are the law keepers, blessed are those who go to the temple 3 times a week, blessed are those who do not weave 2 thrums together on the Sabbath and do not write 2 letters down and don't have a delete key. Do you know, what are you saying, Jesus? You're working in different categories to the categories that we've been used to. And they're starting to think, is Jesus starting a new religion? And so Jesus here clarifies his attitude to the Jewish law. And he gives his followers, in doing this, a principle on how they're to behave in all sorts of situations. And so we're going to look at both the situation in a moment, but the principle first, and it's how to think about the law. And so Jesus says here, and I'm in Matthew chapter 5 and sentence 17, Jesus says, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. No new religion, says Jesus. He's saying, you've got the law and the prophets, the Old Testament commands, and I am the end point. I am the fulfillment. I am the goal. The law and the prophets, all of that is pointing to me. Now, that actually sends the Bible commentators into a turmoil because they think, well, hang on, doesn't the Apostle Paul say, Romans chapter 7, sentence 4, we died to the law? Doesn't the Apostle Paul say, Romans chapter 10, sentence 4, Christ is the end of the law? Doesn't the Apostle Paul say, Galatians 3:25, we're no longer under the law, and here is Christ saying, I've not come to abolish the law. And prima facie, they say, hang on, isn't there a contradiction between what the Apostle Paul says and what Jesus says? And I mean, Jesus here is quite clear, I've not come to abolish the law. You see him there? I tell you the truth, 18, until heaven and earth disappear. Not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything's accomplished. Now, Christians, down through the years, have taken Jesus very seriously at this point, that he did not come to abolish the law. And 2 reasons you can know that they've taken him seriously at this point, because if he'd come to abolish the law, then you wouldn't have the Old Testament necessarily, it wouldn't be necessary to print that in the Bible, because it wouldn't be relevant if he'd abolished it. But because you've got an Old Testament at the beginning of the Bible, you know that Jesus thinks the Old Testament is still relevant, is not abolished. 2nd reason's got to do with our news debate at the moment. In the news at the moment, if you follow the news debate at all, and you follow the religious issues in the news debate at all, you'll know that there is debate on how the Old Testament commands on same-sex issues, on the whole homosexual practice issue, relates today in church life today. And if the Old Testament command didn't apply at all, well, then there'd be no debate about that. But that people are debating this issue, and Jesus is, I didn't abolish it. I've not come to abolish it, I've come to fulfill it, means people are debating it. And so, in fact, these 2 sentences up on the wall here, these 2 sentences, Matthew chapter 5, sentence 17, Matthew chapter 5, sentence 18, more PhDs have been written about these 2 sentences in the Bible than in about any other part of the Bible. Now, what we're going to do is I'm going to boldly tread where thousands of PhDs have floundered. So, you ready for it? Here we go. We'll see if we can sort out all those issues in 10 minutes. Here's the first line of interpretation that people have taken. One line of thinking was that they take the Old Testament teachings and they divide them into three different categories: the civil law, the ceremonial law, and the moral law. And that line of thinking was that Jesus abolishes the civil law, abolishes the ceremonial law, stuff to do with the temple, because that's done away with, but keeps the moral law. And John Calvin and a whole lot of other people, that was a very, very high pedigree line of Christian interpretation of these verses for centuries. And with all the respect, I think it was wrong. Because the categories are not in the Bible, and they're just kind of imposed from outside. And I mean, yeah, you can see that some things clearly are in one and not in the other, but some things it's not so obvious. And another line of thinking is that Jesus came himself to confirm the law, to obey the law, and he obeyed the law perfectly. And I think that's true, but I don't think that's what Jesus is talking about here. And the third way of taking this, and this is the way I'm commending to you, is that the law, the prophets, the whole of the Old Testament pointed to Jesus. And Jesus conceives of his life and ministry not in opposition to the Old Testament, but in fulfillment of the Old Testament. I'll just give it to you from a verse a few chapters later in Matthew's Gospel, Matthew's account of Jesus' life. Matthew writes, "All the prophets and the law prophesied until John the Baptist," and John the Baptist, they're all pointing to Jesus. But it wasn't just the prophets that are predicting, it's the law that's predicting as well. And so if the law has a predictive capacity, then it's a bigger concept than thou shalt not. It's a broader idea than that. Law and the prophets means the whole of the Old Testament. And Jesus is, he's saying, I've come to fulfill the whole of the Old Testament. So to give you a metaphor, the Old Testament's like a tadpole. What do you mean? Well, if you've got a tadpole, you know a frog's coming. Intrinsic in the fact that we've now got a tadpole is that there's going to be a frog. Or the Old Testament is like an ambassador. If you've got an ambassador, what do you know? You know somewhere there's a monarch. Somewhere there's a prime minister. Somewhere there's a president. Because an ambassador represents the president, represents the monarch, represents the prime minister. Now, how do you react to the ambassador once the prime minister's arrived? Well, they're not the main game anymore. You focus on the prime minister. They're the one to be interested in. They're the one to listen to focus on, to look to, and to focus on the ambassador once the prime minister's arrived would be to misunderstand the role of the ambassador. And so I think people who keep the laws of the Old Testament but ignore Jesus have misunderstood the role of that law, missed what the law is pointing to. So you say, how should a follower of Jesus react to these actual commands, these instructions in the Old Testament? Well, Jesus says in 19, anyone who breaks one of the least of these commands and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Jesus here is teaching that every little bit of the law stands. How can we understand? How can we do this? How could I have a righteousness greater than the Pharisee? You've just told me, Dominic, the Pharisee leaves their car at home to stop them speeding. Are you saying I should sell my car to stop me speeding so that I wouldn't be tempted to drive it, so I wouldn't be tempted to speed? Is that what you're getting at? Is that the way to get a greater kind of righteousness, that only people who catch the bus get into the kingdom of heaven? Is that what you're saying? And some of you, I know, are feeling all self-righteous at this point, but there'd be enough at one point you'll fall over. The key is understanding how Jesus grasped the law. Let me give it to you. A couple of hundred years before Jesus, back in the Law and the Prophets, there was a prediction of the coming of a greater kind of righteousness. I'm taking you back to the prophet Ezekiel, to Ezekiel chapter 36. And Ezekiel wrote in 36:23, God speaking, I'll show the holiness of my great name, which has been profaned among the nations, the name that you've profaned among them. Then the nations will know that I am the Lord, declares the sovereign Lord, when I show myself holy before their eyes. And then God promises to do something new. I'm going to take you out of the nations, gather you from the countries, bring you back into your own land. I'm going to sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. You'll be righteous. I'll cleanse you from your impurities and from all your idols. What is being predicted here is... Sorry, I'm just learning to drive this. It's 25 there. I'll sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I'll cleanse you from your impurities and all your idols. There's a new kind of righteousness coming, a new kind of purity. I'll give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I'll remove from you your heart of stone, and I'll give you a heart of flesh. And I'll put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and to be careful to keep my laws. And you will live in the land that I gave your forefathers, and you will be my people, and I will be your God, and I will save you from your uncleanness. And what is being predicted is a whole new order of righteousness, a whole new order of cleanness, because it's different to what the Pharisees had. They had an external righteousness. But this is a spirit righteousness, a changed heart righteousness, that God puts his spirit on someone's heart so that when they see a law of God, they say, God, I want to do that. I want to live in a way that pleases you. You're moving me to keep your laws. And Jesus is saying here, you have that spirit work in your heart. You have that internal righteousness. You have an internal cleanness. And then Jesus goes on to speak about how this applies in different kinds of situations. And he's working it through, first in anger, then next week we're doing the office affair, and then we're going to divorce, and then we're going to promises and lies and revenge and love. And first one is anger. Matthew 5:21. Jesus says, you've heard it was said to the people long ago, do not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you, anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother, Raca, is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Now, the initial command is pretty clear, do not murder. But the Pharisees, they go and have a big debate. Well, what exactly is murder? I mean, is it murder if it's... I mean, is manslaughter murder? Is that murder? I mean, is euthanasia murder? Is abortion murder? Is what stage in the baby's life? What is stem cells? Is aborting the embryo? A whole range of... They got into debates. What does Jesus say? He doesn't get into any of those debates. You've heard it was said, do not murder. But I tell you, do not be angry. I tell you, anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. And anyone who says to his brother, Raca, is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Jesus doesn't even get into the debate about what murder is. He says, you've got to have a heart right in the way you relate to people. And then he gives an application to how this applies. First, he applies it to interacting amongst his followers. And so he talks about what happens when your brother is angry with you. See, 23, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, I'm off to church. I'm going to church. And what do you do? Oh, somebody's got something against me. They're really angry with it. Jesus says, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go be reconciled to your brother. Then come and offer your gift. I mean, I've got to say, I'm the minister of a church. I pastor a church out at Annandale. And I was thinking about this and how does it apply to us? And I was thinking, I need to stand up and say, if you're at church with us this Sunday morning and you know that you're sitting over there and you're sitting over there because you don't want to sit over there because Michael's over there and you're really angry with Michael, do not give any money this morning. Because you've got to fix things before God before you do that kind of... Now, Can you imagine me saying, do not give any money this morning? Well, only if I believe what Jesus was saying. Much more important than what is happening on the external is that our hearts are right before God. Now, that's how we relate, if you like, with the other brother, with the other follower of Jesus. What if it's my enemy? What if it's my adversary? Well, you see here, 25, settle matters quickly with your adversary who's taking you to court. Do it while you're still with him on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. I tell you the truth, you'll not get out till you've paid the last penny. Again, it's pretty clear. You've offended someone. Someone's got something against you. You need to be quick to reconcile. You need to take the initiative. I've spent the morning this morning ringing up counsellors from Leichhardt Council to make appointments with them to tell them about our development application that we've got coming up before the council in about 4 weeks' time. But the public comment, the public objection period for our development application has just closed. And a fortnight and a half ago, right in the middle of that public comment time, I was sitting at home at my desk about 3:30 on the Friday afternoon working, preparing this study for you. And sitting at my desk, and in the middle of the afternoon, Andre, who works with me, rang, and he just walked across the road from our church, diagonally across the road to the coffee shop there, nice little French patisserie, and walked in to buy a cappuccino, and sitting there on the counter was a petition against our church. And he rang me up because he was shocked to see this petition against our church, and it's against our development application. And he took a photo with his mobile phone. It's not very clear because no mobile phone photos are clear, but I'll just read it to you. Dear customers, we ask for your participation in this petition against the proposed development for Annandale Church. We do this through concern for the local situation that will arise out of the development, as an anticipated fluctuation of people through Annandale will leave many residents compromised for parking, as off-street parking will not be provided for those who will be using the new venue developed. As a sign of your objection, please sign the petition form that will be presented to the local council, along with many others who share your view. Now, what's my reaction? How would you react if you got that petition against you? Wouldn't you be angry? Well, ring up the architect, have a whinge, be grumpy. How can they do this? That's the kind of thoughts that, what should I do? Because I was sitting there reading Jesus. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who's taking you to court. Do it while you're still with him on the way. He may hand you over to the judge. The judge may hand you over to the officer. He may be thrown into prison. I tell you the truth. You'll not get out until you've paid the last penny, like our council. What should I do? Well, I figured if I'd be a hypocrite to stand up before you today if I hadn't taken Jesus' words seriously at that point. And so I drove down. Coffee shop had just closed by then, but the door was still ajar. I kind of pulled it open. They were a bit shocked. Somebody's coming in when the door's closed. And I said, could I talk to the boss? There's the boss there. And I said to him, g'day, I'm the minister of the church. We met. We're just diagonally across the road over there. And one of our people was over here buying a cappuccino, and they said that you had a petition up against us and that you're upset and angry with us as a church. And I just thought I'd come over and kind of hear what your concerns are and see if I could help sort things out. And I thought he was going to talk to me about parking, because that's what the petition was all about. And Andre had told me the petition was all about parking. And, I mean, I had all my arguments worked out that the big time for church is 6:30 on Sunday night or 9:30 on Sunday morning, and there's not that many shops open, and it probably won't affect you because you're not open at that time. And so I had all my arguments there. And he said, yeah, I'm really concerned. I've heard you're opening a coffee shop. I was stunned because the petition wasn't about coffee shops, but I guess you couldn't run a petition in Annandale against another coffee shop. And so they'd thought that parking was a more kind of win the public heart issue. But I was able to explain to him that we had thought of a coffee shop 18 months ago as part of our plans, but we dropped it more than 12 months ago. And in fact, the zoning regulations of Mr. Sartor's arranged things so you couldn't do one if you wanted to now. And so, therefore, it wasn't part of the deal. And he said, oh, okay, well, if that's the case. And so he took the petition down. Now, did I want to go and see him? No. Did I feel nervous going in? Yes. Did I go in saying, well, how dare you put up a petition against us and have this? No. I went in saying, I've heard that you might be angry with us and I thought you might be upset, and so I've come to try and make peace. Now, there's a story with a happy ending. But I could tell you another story where I've done exactly the same thing, where there wasn't a happy ending. But I still, on reflection, think it was the right thing to do to obey Jesus at this point and just go in and say, look, I could have, maybe we've offended you. I'm trying to put things right. Could I just hear what your concerns are? Because that's the way Jesus tells. I'm not to be up the murder end. I'm up at the end of seeking peace and not being angry. Now, we're going to take those question sheets. If you want to jot down a question or a comment at this point. But you can see that that is a kind of righteousness that is greater than the Pharisees, because it's a heart surgery kind of righteousness. It's about having a changed heart, being different. The Pharisees are debating, how far can I go? Whereas Jesus is saying, get your heart right before God. Peter's going to give us the administrative announcements, then we'll have a bash at some of those questions and comments. Here we go. Some Christians believe that they should keep the Old Testament law, such as church on Saturday, not eating lobster. Are they wrong? And then there's another one, which is here as well, which is, I love eating prawns and medium rare steak. However, according to the Old Testament law, such foods are considered unclean and not to be eaten. How should I view the law in the light of what we learned today? Yeah, that the whole debate about how to apply the Old Testament law is firmly raised today. And just to come back to the why have lots of people written their PhDs on this subject, much of it has got to do with the place of how to understand those laws and people wanting to get that issue right. There's a very helpful book that I've put to the City Bible Forum administrators that we ought to be selling next week. It's only about $5 or $6, $7, that kind of thing. But it's by a man called John Richardson. It's a short little book, and it's called If I Can Eat Prawns, Why Is Gay Sex Wrong? And that really, as a title, gets to the nub of the issue, because there are commands forbidding gay sex in the Old Testament, and yet there are also commands forbidding shellfish eating in the Old Testament. And lots of Christians enjoy sweet and sour, and yet I would argue that gay sex is wrong. How do I get to that conclusion? Here is the 30-second answer. You take all the various Old Testament laws and imagine them as white light, and they come and hit Jesus, or are fulfilled in Jesus. They hit the prism of Christ, and that white light is refracted in all sorts of different directions. And so the food laws, one, if you want to see how the food laws, one is refracted, you might want to jot this down. Mark chapter 7 is the place to go and look. But in Mark chapter 7, Jesus speaks about how the fact that it's not from the external that I'm made unrighteous, but it's my heart, the condition of my heart, that determines whether or not I'm righteous or unrighteous. And there's a little line in brackets there where Mark makes the comment, in saying this, Jesus declared all foods clean, because what goes into me from the external, what I eat, that doesn't make me unclean. It's the state of my heart before God that makes me unclean. Now, so, okay, the food laws then are diminished in significance. They are done away with. That's how they're refracted through the prism. And yet a law like the murder law hits the prism and is refracted out to become much more intensified. And we get to the heart of, do not be angry, rather be loving. Now, I could take you through some of the other ones, and in fact, most of the logic of the Sermon on the Mount is taking those various Old Testament laws. And so you see that the next few weeks is, Jesus says, in next week's one, you have heard it was said, do not commit adultery. And next week, we're going to be looking at how that law is refracted through the prism of Christ and the office of fair. The next one, you have heard it said, anyone who divorces his wife. And the week after that, we'll be looking at that subject and see how Christ refracts that. And then there's one on swearing, and then there's one on revenge. And we're going to be looking at that refraction over the next few weeks. And so we'll leave that to be unpacked the next couple of weeks here. You just stop me when you want to, Peter. I'll just keep going until then. Does the gift referred to in verse 23 and verse 24 also include serving God, e.g. a role in the church service? If you're offering your gift at the altar, and I took it to apply to money, but yeah, I can't see why it wouldn't apply to just general service of God. In fact, I remember at one point being completely out of relationship with somebody and standing up the front of a church meeting to help administer things and feeling an enormous sense of hypocrisy and that I needed to go and fix it before things went on. And so, I mean, I didn't actually walk off the platform and go and do it, but straight after that, I went and fixed it before the next one. And that was me working out, I think, how to apply that situation. Could Matthew 5:25 be taken to mean that the role of the lawyer could become obsolete? Yes. In heaven, there'll be no sicknesses because, and so no need for hospitals. There'll be no fires, there'll be no burglaries, there'll be no criminals, and we will be at peace, and so there'll be no lawyers, praise God. If you're a lawyer here, it's lovely to see you at the City Bible Forum. Now I'm just going through one more. In light of this passage, how should we respond to workmates who use our coffee mugs or bosses who go back on their word? Should we confront them as opposed to being angry in our hearts? I think we should. Do you know? But I think we've got to do it. We've got to make sure that our external behaviour is appropriate, is submissive, is polite. But if we have problems in our hearts, I think we need to be authentic and say, look, I just want you to know that XYZ caused me a real problem. And so I'm encouraging my wife to say to her boss that if for me to keep working at this practice, it's going to need to be a higher priority for you for me to be able to pick up the kids on time. And so not to put that pressure on me straight after 2 o'clock because it just makes it too hard for me. Yeah. Thanks, Peter. I'm sorry if I didn't get to your question. That's all for today. It's lovely.